anything that they recommended that would have been an improvement to a park, not only specifically for South Star, but for just events in general down there, we accelerated very fast. And so it was just really, really fun to be on like the perspective from the city and being able to deliver on promises and timelines like that, like things that would normally take over a year to kind of get through and start. Like with the snap of a finger, we were moving a lot of things out there. And so, that hurricane, though, man.
Hello, welcome back to the What Podcast. I'm Barry. That's Russ. We are, I don't even know how we're going to describe this, Russ. We're in October. This is when we typically think the music festival season sort of takes a quiet time and, you know, what are we going to talk about every week? And it turns out it's probably as busy, if not busier, than the middle of
it
the
was
summer.
Busy. Yeah,
right?
Who would have thought? Yeah, we thought we'd be on a break by now.
Yeah, we're like, what are we going to talk about? Whatever would we talk about? We're going to talk today. So this is going to be the final, I think. I say final, not final. We're going to kind of move on a little bit. We're going to wrap up South Star because we have a special guest. South Star again, and this... For those of you who don't know, excuse me, for those of you who don't know, this is a podcast where we kind of like to focus on festivals, Bonnaroo being the primary, but we also like to go to other festivals. And South Star happened in Huntsville,
Coming up on 3 weeks now, yeah.
And it got rained out. And so why does that matter? You know, you think you move on. But what we have found is we like that sort of sausage making. How do you deal with that? We talked in the past couple of weeks with folks who were there, had a blast for the one day that it happened. We talked about the mud. We talked about why it was canceled. But today we have a special guest, Matt. He's the dude. He is the director of music operations for the city of Huntsville. So he was right there, right? I mean, he was correct, helping make these decisions, not only to get it ready, but to, you know, make that call on Sunday morning, go, no go, right?
Yeah.
So you were there. Did you agree? Did he make the right call?
Absolutely, 100%. Everyone, you know, when that call came out, that was about 9 local time, that said, you know, we're not having the rest of the day. It was a moment of disbelief, like, oh, man. And then, well, no, you know, that does kind of make sense. I could see that. And then just kind of relief. Because, you know, leaving there Saturday, it was getting really muddy. Yeah. But, yeah, this is interesting because it's what goes into that decision to say, cancel, pull the plug? And this really gets into it, you know, and the things that they tried to do to try to prevent a cancellation, because that is the last thing anybody wants, including us, including the artists, including the city. But, you know, when it's the right call, that's the way it's got to go.
Yeah, that's what's fun about this. And Russ, you'll agree, Matt and so many of the people that we have on this show. And it's interesting to me. I don't know why. Maybe I'm just old and cynical, but I keep thinking about, you know, some suit somewhere is making a decision that, you know, he doesn't care. He's just looking at a spreadsheet. We haven't had that. We haven't found that guy yet, have we?
Not in this industry. I mean, that certainly exists for a lot of things out in the world, I'm sure. And, you know, and there's plenty to complain about because that does happen. But in this industry, in this case, it's people like you and me that are putting this thing on.
It's another dude who just wants to go see Gwen Stefani.
Right.
Or Blink 182, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because his kid wants to see go see Blink 182. And now he's got to tell him it isn't happening because it's muddy.
Yeah. I also think this is a good response to, I'm sure you've seen them. There's some comments that people have made. I'll on social media, you know, criticizing them for canceling and say, oh, the city will never have them back. This is the last year. I can't believe they'll never have this festival again. Well, no, that's not the case. And that's kind of what sets us apart is when we have those questions, we find out who to ask and go ask them. Yeah, right?
That's exactly right. So we called Matt. I reached out to the city. I wanted the mayor.
Yeah.
Because I know he was such a big deal in all of this. And they said, no, the person you need is Matt. And Matt was great, is great.
They were right. Yeah. Were... His title, I believe, is Chief Music Officer. Is that right?
And he's the only one we looked.
Yeah.
We tried to get him to answer that, country. Right? Only one in the country.
How many cities have a Chief Music Officer?
Yeah, we talk about that. And, you know, let's don't just pass by that because a lot of cities have a person in their chamber or something that, you know, entertainment, movies, whatever, and music is in the title somewhere. And not a lot gets done. And he talks about that. They are committed. And that's 100%. Why I think this is so interesting. They are so committed that they are willing to, put on this event. And I didn't know this until you asked. I think you asked because you had heard about the contract. The contract is for 3 years. Well, it wasn't supposed to start till next year.
Right.
I mean, right?
Yeah, that's fascinating because they started this journey thinking that 2025 and beyond is what they were looking at.
Yeah, a realistic goal. We can do this next year. Right.
Yeah, and as late as April of this year, they were still thinking, okay, it's going to be 2025.
Right.
And then what happened? What Blink said, hey, we want to headline something. What have you got? And they managed to pull off a festival in a shockingly short amount of time. When you consider everything that goes into, you know, because this is a park, you know, so it's basically got nothing. And how much they built and contracted and pulled in and set up just in those few months.
Yeah. So while we were off air, I was trying to think about who is the listener for this show. If you're that person who bought a ticket because you wanted to see whatever band that was on the lineup and now you're mad because it got rained out, I'm sorry. I get it. I 100% get it. You're going to be mad.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're that person who's been there, you know, maybe to a different, you know, more than one or two, like Russ, like me, if you're ankle deep in mud, it's fun for a minute. It might be fun for that afternoon. It might be fun for three or four bands. But at some point, you start thinking about your own well-being and your comfort. And then, as I said, I think I said, you wake up that next morning and you got to put those same wet shoes on.
Yeah. If you didn't, pack for 2 days of mud, then
it's not as much fun.
Also, the needle kind of moves a little bit from just an inconvenience to being uncomfortable to being dangerous. I mean,
the last
thing they want is somebody to slip and fall. And get trampled or, you know, some
and
other...
security
or,
can't you know, get to you because they
can't get to you.
And yeah.
Yeah, they said the golf cart paths were, muddied up. You know, if they can't get critical services in and out, it's just not going
to
happen.
And the band can't get there. And the band's standing in mud and they're going to get electrocuted. Yeah, it's a
lot
more than...
There's a lot of safety to it.
It's a lot more than you want to think about. And that's kind of what we talk about. But also we talk about, and this is really... And we're going to have him back on.
Oh, 100%.
100% we're going to have Matt back on because Huntsville is committed to becoming a music city and a music destination. And there's way more involved in that than just saying that's what we want to do. I mean, I don't know how else to put it, you know, because that's what it sounds like a lot of cities do. Yeah, we want to have music. Well, okay. You know, what does that mean?
Huntsville's actually got a plan, and this music festival is only one part of it. I thought that was fascinating when he was talking about some of the other benefits and packages that they're looking at trying to offer to encourage more artists to play Huntsville and to tour and, you know, what can they do to help enable that? Pretty neat.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty, it's detailed, but not as much. I want to get into it because we ended up getting into the South Star way more than I thought we would, because I wanted to talk about the other stuff, because Chattanooga, where we live, is, you know, we pretend like we're committed to this too. But, I mean, they're talking about giving stipends, basically grants, if you will, to bands who are touring and doing five shows a year. I mean, it's crazy.
Right.
It's not just, hey, we need to have a venue. You know, it's much more than that. And,
yeah, they're thinking much, much more long-term than you and I realized.
Yeah, exactly. All right, here we go. It's a long interview. This was a long setup. That's because you wouldn't stop talking. I can never get you to stop talking.
Yeah, every time.
All right, guys, here's Matt. And, man, he was great. And I can't wait to have him on again. Oh, by the way, that's an awesome T-shirt.
Thank you.
Show everybody this that T-shirt.
This is from Cave Fest, which I just got back from this past weekend in Pelham, Tennessee, not far from Bonnaroo, not far from Manchester, and wanted to get into that this week, but I think we've got so much more that, you know, we might have to just put that off a little bit because we've got Matt here to deal with.
Yeah, we're going to do that soon. I can't wait to hear it, and we'll have, I hope, some special guests to talk about that too.
Yeah.
I wish I'd have got you to buy me one of those T-shirts. We need to talk about that. All right.
Yeah. Well, you'll just have to go next year.
Yeah. There. All right. So here we go with Matt. And thanks, Matt, for your time. And we'll just see where this goes.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key, and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Oh, there he is. Hey, Matt. This is Matt from Huntsville. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm pretty excited about this. We're going to try to cover as much as we can because I'll be honest with you. You have, I think, one of the jobs that I would probably like to have. And I'm betting Brian feels pretty similar.
Yeah, yeah. It wouldn't bother me none at all.
Yeah.
The little I know about it, which that's what we're here to find a little bit more out about.
So let's just jump right in first. It's been a couple of weeks, and I know you've probably had your follow-up meetings with your staff and probably even with the organizer, C3, and some of that. So what's the two-week recap of South Star from your office?
I mean, it's a little bit of it's mostly highs, a little bit of lows. Honestly, the to those that aren't aware, like, we got in one of the 2 days, and then the weather just was not did not hold up with the grounds where we had to cancel Sunday. But overall, I would feel like it's a huge success, like getting a day of the festival for the community to see the vision is very exciting, and how the C3 team executed it and everything like that. And now the pressure is on the fans asking when it's going to come back, not if it's going to come back. So that's a huge upside. And then, it also, I thought it was a positive to where anytime you cancel an event, it's obviously not great for fans, but you also have to look at it where, like, most of the fans are upset because they had the time of their life on Saturday and then they couldn't come back on Sunday and have the party. So they were willing to work, willing to risk unsafe conditions even to, like, have the party out there. So we're just thrilled with everything, seeing all the guests that came in from out of town, the community response. South Star was a huge success in our office.
Let me go back one, and then I know Brian's got questions. I can see him ready, but I want to ask sort of time leap. So that was the recap. Going into South Star, again, from your point of view, from your office as music officer for the city of Huntsville, what were the goals? What was the stated mission for this. And I'm thinking, obviously, you know, you want to have a good concert and see good bands. That's the obvious one. But, you know, you've got an official role. We've talked to on this show that Huntsville has gone after music and things like this for the city. So I kind of want to, what's the, you know, what was your elevator pitch when you were talking about this?
Sure. You know, it kind of has a three-tier of success approach where a little bit of backstory. Before I started the my role here, I started the Huntsville Music Office in middle of 2022. Huntsville had a festival for about 15 years that ended about a decade earlier called Big Spring Jam. The number one thing our community and any kind of stakeholder surveys or any kind of feedback, literally since the day I started the office, the community was asking, like, is Big Spring Jam going to come back? We want a big festival again. Can we make that happen? So there was a lot of pressure from the community and a lot of enthusiasm to try bring a festival back. Now, as y'all know, there's only so many companies in the world that really can execute a large world-class festival on the scale that, you know, like our partner C3 Presents can. So took about 18 months to get from the first conversation to the city council agreement for them to come into it. But the one aspect was, of course, that community quality of life initiative. Another one, of course, is the tourism and the economic development side of it. These festivals bring in a lot of visitors. And so obviously, like, that was a big aspect of it. And then something we're doing with music that's really, really fun and unique is that reutilizing it as a talent attraction piece with, like, our economic development model, in that Huntsville has a very, very rare very, very rare challenge, in that we have among the lowest unemployment in the country, but we have several thousand very high paying jobs that need to be filled. And so we're utilizing music as a way to help fill those jobs with, like, the other industries within the area. So you kind of see the festival as a learn about Huntsville through the festival, visit Huntsville for the first time through this festival, and then maybe move here or think about relocating here when you have a family or et cetera. And so that's kind of the piece we use with, like, the Orion Amphitheater and all the music, where, you know, more music in a community makes it a better place to live. So you have that quality of life initiative. And then, of course, what it does with economic development, and then that talent attraction are kind of the big three pillars that we kind of focus on in terms of the music office's work. And this festival, obviously, a huge piece with that.
Well, Matt, there's a handful of directions that I want to go here that we have very limited time to get to. To stick with where we're at with the festival itself, you used some words just a second ago that made me think, and I don't want to quote you exactly, or a little paraphrase, something about people locally were wondering about, you know, will it come back after the year that you had? And maybe you can help us with what I believe is a rumor. I never saw anything that I could source it to find out whether it was accurate or not, that there was a three-year contract between C3 and the city of Huntsville, your offices, your initiatives, between something governmentally. Can you speak to that? Or is that information that you're privy to give out? Is there a long-term, even if it's a short long-term commitment with the C3 and South Star?
Absolutely. Yeah, correct. There is a three-year contract. The contract actually starts in 2025, but there was enough enthusiasm and momentum for the team to like they could pull off a successful year.
I want to go back there, but go ahead.
182 kind of pushed that, right?
Yeah, I want to go back there, but continue. Sorry, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, and so we actually kind of have like a bonus year, or kind of like accelerated it up. But yeah, we have we're planning to at the very least have three of these with C3 Presents, and obviously, like, we want more. You know, we want to get a good decade run out of this and really, really build it into something special. And so, yeah, absolutely. Do not look at this as a one and done. And so, yeah, we're going to be jumping in and figuring out what year two looks like here soon.
The third leg of the mission that you mentioned is one of the things, and the reason I asked that question, because of the people that I spoke to that went, Huntsville was a as much a part of the festival and the good feeling of it as the music itself from everybody that I talked to. And that's fans who went to staff that worked it. I mean, I won't name names because, you know, it was a private conversation, but this person's like, I'm from New York and I can't wait to go back to Huntsville as a visitor. The Sunday, and Russ can speak to this, you know, when everybody got word that it wasn't going to happen on Sunday, they just kind of said, all right, how do we, you know, let's go have some fun. Mm-hmm. Let's go to the restaurants. Let's go to the bar, even Saturday night. That has to have played well in your office Monday morning a week ago.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's like we said, it's not like all these people are coming in town, staying in their hotel rooms, screaming at the walls. It gave them an opportunity to come out to Huntsville and experience the restaurants and the culture. We had a really, really solid day with our other attractions, the U.S. Space and Rocket Centers here in Huntsville. That's the largest tourist attraction in the state of Alabama. And so they saw a nice big influx of visitors. There was a Sunday night at the Von Braun Center. There was a wrestling, a WWE event. And we heard that they had a huge influx of like last minute ticket sales. I actually went with my 4-year-old daughter and took her to her first wrestling event, and it was very fun. But yeah, just the energy around downtown on Sunday. Sunday is usually kind of like sleepy quiet downtown, but there was a significant energy downtown. Some impromptu kind of like block parties from local musicians playing outside that had like much more bigger crowds than they normally do, and you just saw more people around than you usually see on a Sunday.
I got to ask, how bad were the grounds?
You know, we were actually just out there yesterday, and they don't look, you wouldn't be able to tell there was a music festival out there. The team did a really, really good job of cleaning up everything. We just, that side of the park just, I'd say about 50% of the park is what you probably saw in the pictures, where it was just like really, really muddy and unsafe, and potentially some infrastructure having liabilities, some emergency services not being able to respond in time. And that's mostly because we just had put some fresh sod down and had done some work to the grounds to kind of to accelerate and kind of get everything ready for that 2024 instead of 2025. As you might know, like once you get a hurricane level rainstorm on fresh sod, that just ended up not holding like we wanted to. And we're going to make, that's something our landscape team is very confident they can adjust going into next year. Just the grass was too new, but park looks great right now. That's just John Hunt Park's 450 acres and super scale. That's 100 acres bigger than Grant Park in Chicago where Lala is. And so this kind of like 30, 35 acre parcel where year one of South Star is, about half of it was just new grass that just like didn't hold up well. But if you went out there right now, you wouldn't be able to tell there was a festival other than that red clay is now kind of like a mix of like green and brown. And we're going to start looking at that soon and making adjustments ASAP.
Well, that takes me right back to where I wanted to go back to, because that adds a little bit to the question. I was looking at Huntsville Magazine from April of this year that had a write-up on, I think it's primarily you, but there was some other things within the city, infrastructure, music-wise, and the information was attributed to you. I don't have a printer at the house, so everything's handwritten here, so I'm sorry. If I stumbled through some of it, but from April of 2024, the information was attributed to you that the initial agreement for this South Star Festival was for 25, as you just said, 25, and I guess would be 26, 27. That was in April of this year, and you were saying it's going to be in 25, which would have been, I'm guessing, September. That is a rapid acceleration to September, to 3 weeks ago. And we know Blink-182 had a lot to do with that because we've already talked about that here slightly, but we didn't know a whole lot of details. Tell me that real quick. How did that pivot so fast, and did you panic? That led to also maybe let's throw some sod down. Let's make sure we're good to go on the site itself. If you'd speak to that fast transition, because that's just not something you see every day.
Yeah, it's like, hey, sure. Guess what, honey? We're hosting Christmas tomorrow.
Yeah, get ready.
Everybody's coming.
You know, it definitely wasn't panic. I would say it was a lot more enthusiasm. You know, when we heard that we were going to like move up here, it was almost like a bonus. I wouldn't say panic at all. It just kind of got us into high gear. The way that Huntsville's government works a lot different than other governments. In terms of, we take a lot of pride in how efficiently we can do things. And the leadership I have at the city is so supportive of this music initiative and everything we're doing. And we're seeing it now that, like, we've been into it 2 years, we're really, really seeing the results. I mean, we have C3 Presents coming into a market with 240,000 people in here to, like, build a signature festival. That's absolutely amazing. Yeah. So it was initially enthusiasm, but then it was like, oh, wow, like, we already just added a lot more work for ourselves.
Well, that's what I meant by the panic part. Yeah. I tend to, when I say panic, just high-level anxiety, but... Then quickly also to kind of piggyback off of that, with the added variable of this weather situation, you just talked about the grounds. You were looking at them in the last 24 hours. They look good. It's grass. It's ground. I mean, it's going to be fine. We all know that long term. But can you really evaluate what did and didn't work? Can you really put in an accurate evaluation to what happened? And I think the quick answer is no, not really. But how are you working with making your checklist when a hurricane came in and destroyed everything you were trying to do? Like, it makes it very difficult.
It's hard to plan.
Can the grounds hold that many people next year? Were lines for bathrooms, waters, all the stuff we talk about on the show about every single festival that is from a user experience standpoint. How do you evaluate that now? Maybe the answer is you can't accurately. What do you say to that?
Oh, no, I'd say we're already evaluating it. And then, you know, that one patch where the main stage was, if it was the other half of the park, which had already been, that had been laser graded and, like, the sod had been there for years, that's where, like, a lot of, like, the youth soccer and football teams practice, like, that side held up great. If all of that stuff was on, like, the entire park, like, mm-hmm. I think that we're looking at a successful Sunday. The reality is when we did a walkthrough at 4 o'clock on Friday, we started getting, very nervous. It was just getting really slippery out there. And it was one of those where it's like, oh, it says the rain's going to stop, but the rain's not stopping. Every time you looked on your phone, it felt like from Friday to Saturday, say, like, rain stopping in 15 minutes, but it just never stopped.
Yep. Traveling from Chattanooga there, I did the same thing. I was like, it looks like it's going to be good. Yeah. No, it doesn't. Now it does. Yeah. No, it doesn't. And that's hurricane weather. I mean, that's what we deal with in the South. You know, you can't – the meteorologists get so much bleep about being, oh, they're always wrong. Man, they ain't miracle workers. Yeah. It's a hurricane.
And in hindsight, it's like, wow, like, I mean, it was more than just a hurricane. We look at, like, all the challenges that are happening in, like, communities, like, we're
infrastructure.
Very lucky.
Yeah,
we're lucky that we lost a day of a music festival and not significantly more, like, you know, like our heart goes out to, like, the Asheville, North Carolina areas and everybody that's affected. It's just 100%. Awful to see that.
Matt,
I will say, like, what made me, like, very, very proud is I've been involved with, like, a lot of festivals, like, over the kind of 20 years of my music career, some good, some bad. And, you know, there's always, like, in any kind of situation, you can kind of come out with, like, a lot of camaraderie and a lot of pride. I've never been more proud in an effort of being involved with this aspect with both the C3 and the city team, to where, you know, we did a thorough walkthrough at 4 o'clock on Friday with, like, the head of our city administrator, John Hamilton, and the head of our landscape team, Tony Ivey. I think it's safe to say those guys are music festival industry legends now in terms of what they pulled off, because the fact that we got in Saturday was amazing, and that, you know, Tony had about 200 of his landscape team out there the full day Friday, trying to patch everything up. And then Saturday, 6 a.m, he had a convoy of every dump truck that the city had with every, like, all the mulch you could find, like, within the region. The stuff they put on the warning track, they call it warning track, material at baseball games to soak up the stuff. So
diamond
seeing
dry,
the effort
diamond
that
dry,
the city
yeah.
put in, and just seeing that line of dump trucks and 200 people waiting there at 6 a.m, and going up until, you know, we had to push the gates back to 2:30, which was also a big thank you to the local restaurants for the local restaurants were very appreciative of like the gates moving from 1 to 2:30 because they were crushing it at lunch. Yeah. But the C3 team even put a slide up like on the stages on their AMAGs in between bands, like doing a big thank you to Tony because I mean they came in and saved the day. But that just like constant rain, constant foot traffic on that one side of the park just made it where it was undoable on Sunday. But we're just, you know, we're so lucky that we got in that Saturday. And then also for the community aspect, like now the locals in Huntsville have seen the scale of like what this event is. And most of the people that were locals here that went to that had never been to a C3 Presents festival. And so, and as you all know, like, I mean, they're very world-class, like their infrastructure like definitely makes a statement. And so it's one of those you have to see to believe it. And now that our community has seen it, they are just like so excited to get it back in. You know, we need there's some pent-up demand for Blink-182 and Beck now in our market too. Yeah. And so even if it doesn't work with the South Star aspect, like hopefully we can figure out like how to get like the acts that didn't make it that Sunday.
You got the venue sitting there right there waiting on them, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Couple of things, and then I know I want to get into the city part of it, but you know, wrap up the festival. But a couple of things, and I know numbers are always squirrely, but what would have been a sellout, and can you give us some idea of what the crowd was on Saturday? I've heard somewhere between 20-25, you know, and that's just friends of mine in the industry guessing. So I'd be curious to know.
Yeah, I think we don't have the exact numbers, but I think it's safe to say it came in around 20 on that Saturday. We were projecting to do a couple thousand more on Sunday, just with like the lineup and everything. And I think not having a big slate of college football like lends for more people to know what they're going to do on the Sundays versus Saturdays down south. Sellout year one, we didn't really have a sellout number just because of the size of that park. You could fit 50,000 people in that footprint very, very easily. But, you know, our target was somewhere around that 25,000 in year one.
Okay.
We thought that would be a really, really good benchmark toward success. And I think that all things given, like y'all seen the images and like to the people that were out there, like it felt crowded. It felt really, really good and packed, but not too packed out there.
Yeah.
I'd say that we definitely hit our goal of getting the amount of people out there. And I know we even had a few thousand people not actually like stand in on that Saturday too, just because they couldn't travel in because there was a hurricane and last minute like yeah, kind of things like
say,
that.
I would say 20 is a good number then, given everything. The other thing you
mentioned, yeah, that would put us as the highest attended regional music festival in terms of a daily attendance of all the ones that are like kind of already established in our market. So you know, the fact that in year one we had with all those conditions and a hurricane, 20,000 people. Through the door, I think was tremendous, and I think also shows that just like the kind of thirst that our community has for music.
You mentioned two things. A lot of the Huntsville people and some of our friends that are down there were saying the same thing going in, that you know, a lot of the folks that have never been have no idea what to expect. And one of the things that you mentioned, and that's one of the things that C3 is so good about, and another thing that we love talking about on their show because we love the sausage making, is like we're big Bonnaroo people. That's how we, that's why we started this. And one of the things that they do that kind of goes unnoticed until you notice it is things like laser grading the land. They walk around with notepads and pencil and say, that's where the rain's going. We need to fix that. We need to level that. We need to raise that. We need to put this there, you know, trees here. Those kind of things make a huge difference over time. So I was curious to hear you say that, you know, had you done that on the other side, which I'm assuming you will do in the next 11 and a half months, you know, it improves everything. So the next time around, if it rains, it's not as bad. And in the case of Bonnaroo, if it doesn't rain, then you've got a dust bowl. So, you know, those kinds of things.
And to that notice, I mean, like it was, I was mind blown in that, you know, like I did not work in city government before this realm. I was in the private sector. So I'm a new city government guy, but, and you know, through efforts have had to work through city governments, and it has not always been pleasant. But just you know, like Ted and his team, Corey and Oscar, were very vocal that they had never worked with a city government in the capacity like Huntsville did, and that like just how productive we were for them. So you know, with that saw too, like I mean, if it was 2025, like oh, those roots would have been in place. It would have had like a year of winter kill. It would have looked great. That sod was like an example of like a city improvement to those grounds to get things ready for 2024. And, you know, that's just one example, like for a couple other things where that, you know, they would communicate some aspects of like, hey, there's one part of this park that doesn't meet like ADA standards. We're going to have to, so heads up, we're going to have to bring in, some really expensive temporary flooring to make kind of like an ADA path and to fit within our guidelines. And we said, well, hey, what if we just, you know, help do that for you. And so we put in a lot of, so if you know, there were a lot of like, kind of like sidewalks built into the park that, accommodated that as well. Cause we looked at it as like, hey, this is something that, we need to do on a permanent basis. If we can accelerate that and, you know, and they were like, yeah, this would be, there were a lot of things where they were like, yeah, this would be great for 2025. And we're like, no, we're talking about 2024. And so, you know, 2 months leading up to that festival, I mean, there were sidewalks going from, you know, the airport road, like along that backside, like where all the businesses, like the Back 40 Brewery and all those kind of auxiliary parking lots were. Those, you know, those sidewalks were all brand new being worked on up until the festival. And so, and that came about where like, it was like, hey, you know, we're going to have to probably close a lane of this street during certain times to allow for like pedestrian traffic. And we'd love to have a sidewalk in place next year. And that's when like the city, especially like the, our leadership with John Hamilton, the city administrator, be like, well, no, we're going to go ahead and activate our public works team and get a sidewalk in place for this year. And so anything that they recommended that would have been an improvement to a park, not only specifically for South Star, but for just events in general down there, we accelerated very fast. And so it was just really, really, fun to be on like the perspective from the city and being able to deliver on promises and timelines like that, like things that would normally take over a year to kind of get through and start, like with the snap of a finger, we were moving a lot of things out there. And so, that hurricane now, man.
Well, really fast before I know we want to talk some governmental stuff here that we would like to correlate some with what we're familiar with and where we're from. But before we do that, just if you would, as quickly as you can or as much as you want to stretch out on it. You talked about Friday being there and kind of being like, not sure.
Yeah.
And the weather keeps changing, the forecast. As that was being monitored, let's say Thursday, Friday into Saturday, how much do you know or how much were you involved to be making the decision for Sunday? And when roughly do you think that decision was made? Halfway through Saturday, you're realizing Sunday's not going to work? Was it the middle of the night call, you know, frantic 5 a.m., you know, that kind of thing? And I promise you, somebody was panicking around on your team.
Yeah, how big was the?
There's too much going on here for there not to be panic. But that process from middle of the week to when you decide we can't continue because of safety and weather. How did that go?
And how many people were on that go no go team?
It was a very very tight circle. It was the kind of executive level side of like their team, and then only like myself and maybe like three or four more people at the city that were directly involved in the conversation. Of course, like everybody was aware. I would say that the walkthrough on Friday is when it first kind of came up like, oh, wow, like, you know, this might be tough.
Might get one in, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, but then like kind of at 6 a.m. seeing kind of like that toggle line of like all the gravel and everything, was just like, okay, like we're gonna make this happen. We started doing a thorough walkthrough of the grounds about halfway through the headliner sets on Saturday, starting to assess things and having the conversations, just kind of observing and everything, and that's when the conversation accelerated and picked up. But it sucked. It was not the most awesome decision that like a conversation you have to have, but at the end of the day, it was a there was no doubt 110% that it was the right decision. And so that's where any kind of like the pain got alleviated. Like when you know you're doing the right decision and like you give it your best effort and and you're proud of what you're doing. I mean, Mother Nature is going to be Mother Nature, and so yeah, I'd say by starting at the middle of the headliners on Saturday is when we really started paying attention, watching people like leave, you know, like seeing people holding their kids struggling through the mud and slipping and falling as they're walking out of the show really kind of put things in perspective. But then you start thinking, wow, it's like the last thing you would want is somebody to get hurt, like with some of this infrastructure. And also too, if there was a medical event, can the EMS get to people in time? And so it just, it was absolutely like the right decision. It didn't help that we had a really, really solid day of weather the next day for kind of people to be like, oh, we should have had this, but I think that's why
it was. Seems like it happens that way every time.
Yeah, but then yeah. I'm glad you asked this question, Brian, because I want to dig a little, like thinking about it from that first time festival goer who doesn't know, who doesn't listen to this show, if such a thing can even happen. But like that person who just says, it wasn't raining that hard, and I wanted to see my favorite band. Why did they cancel? You know, they don't think about, and that's what I'm asking you, what are the sort of checklist things, right? There's safety, there's band safety, there's crowd safety, there's, you know, can you get people in and out? And there is this, you know, the infrastructure. Are we destroying what we have? And, you know, so what was the checklist kind of thing?
Safety number one, for sure. Can we execute, like, can 25,000 people come out on Sunday and it be a safe experience? And that answer is just absolutely not. Like, both a combination of the grounds. I mean, you're talking, you know, like medical things, like in terms of twisted ankles and things like that. Like, you know, like we were going to like anticipate bringing in more EMS, more police, everything like that to accommodate Sunday, just because we were seeing some people, you know, starting to slip and need to kind of like come to the medical tent, get some band-aids and stuff like that. And so that seemed to kind of like elevate things. And then just with the, you know, like if any of like the footing on any of those large tents, like even though they were like heavily staked in the ground and like in place, like it just, you just never know when like water weight's going to like mess up with things. There's just too much heavy equipment being like moved around. Golf cart paths were starting to get like compromised, everything like that. And so it just was not going to be, if it was like a couple dozen folks coming out there that could like deal with the mud, like great. But you're talking 25,000 plus people, that could be really, really challenging. And then also with the first year festival, I think that it's safe to say that the experience aspect probably played into it too. Like it just, you know, there would have been people that chucked it out and like would have dove in the mud and kind of done like, we got a lot of nods to like, I think it was Woodstock 94 in some of the comments and everything like that. And it's like easily said, it's more said than done in terms of like, you know, wanting to like brave the mud in those conditions for a full day. And yeah. I know festival goers are kind of used to that, but at the end of the day, like we, you know, we want to deliver, their team wanted to deliver a world-class experience. And, you know, that the safety was one thing for both the artists and the spectators, but also the, you know, just being able to deliver an event we were proud of. You know, I just don't see how that would have been possible on Sunday. I would have had a great time because I like could swim around in the mud and be fine and everything. But I think that, you know, I would not have had a great time if I would have like twisted an ankle or something like that. You know?
Well, even Russ was ready to tap out on Sunday.
But I mean, but once the decision was made, it was like, it was such a, I mean, I don't want to say relief because that, like, you know, because it was definitely like, you know, like we were definitely bummed out about it.
No, I get what you mean.
The last people that want to cancel the event, I promise, are the people throwing the event.
Right.
For both just like financial and just like, I mean, you know, it's not just like we started working on this the week before the show, you know?
Yeah.
But I mean, it was, there was no anxiety. The only anxiety around it was like knowing you were going to have to let the fans out. There was no anxiety at any point on it. Like we were not, if we were making the right or wrong decision, because we're 110% knew that after just seeing the ground, especially after Gwen Stefani and the lights came up and you saw it, it was like, oh wow, like Tony and his team worked a miracle on Saturday, but I mean, there was not enough mulch, I think, in the Southeast that could have, that they could have helped those grounds.
Yeah. Russ, what do you got for Matt before we, and we're going to have to get into the government thing pretty quick.
Yeah, Russ is the only one that made it on the grounds.
I actually made it, and I wasn't supposed to be there, but because of the hurricane, my flight to Florida got canceled, so I ended up in Huntsville, and then,
oh, wow.
Of course, Yeah. So, but yeah, I think from a fan's perspective, it was pretty much the same reaction on Sunday when the news came out. It was kind of a, oh man, because, you know, Sunday, especially for me, musically, Sunday was more stacked than Saturday. Mm-hmm. If I had to pick one day, I would have picked Sunday. But, you know, we all kind of quickly realized, well, no, actually that makes sense. And I think that everybody agreed that's the right call.
Do we really want to do this again?
Yeah, and then it was like, okay, well, we just get a free day in Huntsville to, you know, do whatever we want. So, you know, there was a little bit of disappointment at first, but then we all sort of came around to, okay, well, yeah, this is a good thing for, you know, that's the right call. So, well,
we all know there's nothing worse than putting on wet shoes. I mean, like, nobody likes going that next day with, you know, putting your wet golf shoes back on.
Right. And we're
actually
all...
my 20-year-old festival boots actually did not make it through South Star. The soles of by the end of the night, I had my boots were gap taped up and everything.
It's so a shelf life on everything.
R.I.P.
Because I was kind of walking through too, like kind of like stepping in every puddle and mud hole I could find just to see how deep they were and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And so.
I'm not a big fish fan, but it's the lyric that always sticks with me. Whatever you do, take care of your shoes.
It's the truth.
Whatever you do.
All right. So real quick, and Matt, we might have to do this again if you're willing.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah.
I definitely. But I'm curious. You are. I saw one of the articles that said you might be the only music officer in the country.
I wrote that down too. That was written very non-officially and somewhat flippantly, but is there truth to it, or is this a position that at least from the initial point, you're the only one that has that in governmental city government?
Correct. I was the, there are a couple other state offices now starting to pop up. And what's really cool is that, like, you know, we're kind of, and so there are other music officers. I believe I believe Jimmy Wheeler at Tennessee Music Office is now referring himself as a music officer. Louisiana has a music officer now. And so,
it's been under another umbrella. It's like arts, correct, entertainment, movies, and music down here at the bottom. But Huntsville is fully committed, right?
100%. Like, my office is in City Hall, like one floor away from the mayor. I report to the mayor, and then I report to Shane Davis and John Hamilton, who are economic development and like city administrators. So you got the mayor, John, Shane, and then, you know, like, so basically it's like I'm one call away from like the top brass of the city. And in terms of, you know, like the, in terms of like a mayoral initiative that like we're putting a lot of thought and resources into executing, we're taking growing our music environment very, very seriously from the city. It's the way that we can get things done, and having a city music office at City Hall in terms of just cutting through the red tape. I mean, if it was just a private sector or the chamber that needed to get the sidewalk, in place in John Hunt Park a month before a festival, I mean, that just would not be possible. But the fact that, like, you know, we have a direct line with our leadership and we're one call away with, like, from any department is huge. There's other music offices, and like you said, like a lot of them are through like CDBs or through chambers. Right. Some cities have them, but the way that Huntsville is approaching music is unlike any other city in North America that's ever done in terms of you know, putting our foot in the ground and saying, like, being intentional and data-driven about, like, hey, we want to be a premier music destination in North America. And this way, I think that we kind of describe it as, you know, we don't want to be the same as Austin or Nashville, but we just want to be in the conversation when people are talking about, like, the great U.S. music hubs and have, like, something that's unique to us and special that ties in with, like, our kind of, like, community values and our arts and culture scene. Because it is it is thriving here. It's really, really exciting. And that music being an aspect of getting people to check out Huntsville. You know, we like to say that it's very hard to sell Huntsville on a brochure. People just see it as like, oh, it's a city in Alabama where NASA is.
Yeah, Space City.
It's a bill.
Yeah. And we like to say, man, when you get it worked for me through like the job interview process of this. It's like, we like to say, if you can get somebody in Huntsville for 72 hours, and they start thinking about never leaving, And so, you know, that's a catalyst that, like, music's doing, you know, with, whether it's the shows at the Orion, the Vaughan Brown Center, or these festivals. Like, people, we love seeing license plates that are from out of state, like in the parking lots of our venues, and we love the feedback we're getting of, wow, we had no idea Huntsville was so cool. And so I think that,
I heard that said a lot. Yeah.
But the government aspect of music is really fun. Just the things we're doing. We're the first city to, execute tour grants from a municipality, from a municipality perspective, to where the, if you're a local musician who, has at least 5 dates on a tour, you're entitled to a $750 to $1,500 grant with a $4,500 annual maximum, for your touring efforts. And what's cool is the Tulsa has actually replicated that program now. The city of Tulsa, they have a Tulsa Encore program, where if you look at their website, it's pretty much a copy-paste version of ours. And so it's really cool to see, like, other cities take note of that and kind of follow the lead. And we have there's not a lot of people in the city government, state government, professional realm of music in America, but the ones that are, like, we're in a pretty tight knit fraternity and we talk often. And what's really nice is in the private sector, that might be something seen as, like, competitive or, like, something you might want to send out, like, a cease and desist about. But since it's, like, civic and government, you know, like, we would, like, it's almost like we want, like, any time a city or state, like, replicates one of our programs or we do, or vice versa, that it's like we're very proud of that. And so it's just cool to see the effort. The community has been very, very open and supportive of, like, the role, and especially, like, the local business owners, because, you know, we're seeing a young workforce start to, like, move into the city and fill these jobs.
Let me ask you real quick, Matt, on that, because I wrote it down on my list here that you were just talking about. Is the export programs, that's what you were just referring to, correct?
Yes.
I saw that might have come from what is Make Export Memphis, or Music Export Memphis.
And yeah, I know so you're Elizabeth Cowan, yeah.
Yeah, one of your last gigs, or your prior gig to this, was creative marketing music director of Graceland, by the way. You know, we even got to that. In Memphis, which is just sounds like a cool gig. I don't know that it is, but it certainly sounds like one. but I wanted to speak to that specifically, especially since you brought it up now, where it's a scholarship could be a word that could be used for young people. Grant is a word you used. Basically, it's government subsidized money for bands from Huntsville. We're talking about now, where you're at now. To be compensated for hitting the road and being a touring band. When I first read that, I thought, that's ambitious, man. Like, who qualifies? What kind of money are we talking about? And then I was curious if this was something that you were working on in Memphis first when I saw this Music Export Memphis. Can you expand on that a little bit? Is that where it came from and how that came together? And if we want to do something like that here in Chattanooga, or somebody wanted to do that in Lexington or wherever it might be, what are the expectations that the local musicians, which can vary in every aspect from talent to just overall projections, what could they expect from something like that? And how does that work from the person who might want to take advantage of a government program like that?
Sure. And so, So I was in Memphis for 3 years, and I had seen like the Music Export Memphis logo on a lot of things, but was not really familiar with it. I actually came across Elizabeth, at a convention in Tulsa. Like, she moderated the panel I was on, and we just got to talking, and she was talking about this, music ambassador, like, tour grant program that she had executed, and, how it had been, like, in place for about 5 years, and, you know, how it was a, you know, because musicians are not grant writers. And so, you know, basically she kind of laid it out where it's like, you know, there's a quick, easy form that, like, musicians can fill out. It takes about 5 minutes. There's a defined set of criteria, that makes you eligible. And then there's a point system that determines, like, where you get between that, like, base level to, like, the high level. And it was a, frankly, I was like, there's got to be a catch. This is way too good to be true.
Yeah, 100%.
It was trying to, like, you know,
what it sounded like.
Yeah, and I was trying to, like, kind of, like, find holes in it and just couldn't. So, you know, we got to where we could bring in her and the Music Export Memphis team as a consultant.
to help us develop the program and kind of make it a little more bespoke to hospital. And so that was the end result of like that effort. But, you know, she was amazing to work with. And yeah, that the response in that program, I think we've funded 30 tours so far. And the, you know, being conscious that like, you know, musicians aligning with a government is not always the coolest thing for musicians
to
do.
No, no, and they're not going to trust you at all, actually.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And there are people that, like, you know, no matter how good of work we do, they'll just, like, never trust us. You know, it's like what comes with, like, government and all those
things. Yeah, it ain't rock and roll.
But, you know, so that's why we're very conscious of, like, you know, like, this has to be, like, very, like, laid out and easy to digest and easy to apply for and, like, you know what you're getting. So we hope that, like, with the website, when you go, if you go to hustlemusic.com/map for Music Ambassador Program, because we're putting Hustle on the map, you can kind of see the criteria. But it lays it out to where if you're a, basically you need to have, like, 5 tour dates on the book, and then they have to be, like, they have to be, like, public-facing shows. They can't be, like, private events and weddings. They have to be, like concerts or festival plays or things.
But
like
only
that.
5. That's a good. I mean, that's a starting point that just about any working band can meet the criteria of if they try hard enough. So that's pretty
100%.
Cool.
And that's what we're really trying to push in our community. And so we're seeing established artists that are with agents that are kind of a big deal already, like taking advantage of it. But it's a way to encourage and show the like artists in our community that like. You know, to help like encourage them to take the step
and take the risk of like go out and tour.
Yeah.
Where, you know, but like $750 to $1,500 is not going to fund all the expenses of a tour, but like
a hell of a
every
start.
Little bit helps, you know.
This is
so that,
this
that's
is
what's
kinda...
been really exciting. And the only aspect we ask for the artists is simply to acknowledge that they participate in the program. Like they have to make one social media post that basically is like a hey, like. You know, doesn't even have to say thank you or anything. It's just like, hey, we need you to just like, because you have to get something for a grant, right? And
sure.
So, you know, so they just have to make a social media post that basically acknowledges they're participating in the program. And then, you know, what's been really awesome is seeing how the, you know, a lot of them are like very like long form and very like heartfelt, like this, like these dollars mean a lot to like these artists and, you know, like, and to see them like keep like applying more and more, because you can get up to $4,500 annually. So we have a couple like, that are for their getting like, we're like, who's going to be the first one to get the annual cap? And so, yeah, just to help these artists sustain their careers. And what's really, really amazing is that we're actually seeing like already established, like there's a band called the Bernie Sisters, that actually relocated here. It's a 17 and a 14 year old that have like, they're a full-time touring band. Dad's the sound guy. Mom's the tour manager. They have a Winnebago. They've toured with the Avett Brothers. Like they actually relocated their family here. A big part of that was because of like the tour grant program, because you know the cost of living here is a lot cheaper than other like major say music markets. And just we're in within a 3-hour radius of like so many cities, so you can actually live in Huntsville and play Atlanta, Memphis, Nashville, Birmingham. Sure. Chattanooga, and without even needing a hotel, if you just like want to drive like that 3 hours. And so, getting people that are actually like serious artists, like relocating here is like, because the grant's like a piece of that. And then even more importantly, like Huntsville has been, the story of Huntsville has been a, wow, like once the artist starts getting to a certain level, like they move to Atlanta, Nashville, somewhere like that. And so
same kind of thing here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so this program is a way to keep that talent here. And stuff like that. Cause again, it's not a program that's designed to like fund the whole tour, but it's like, yeah, like it's non-biased towards like any genre. If you meet these qualifications, you do this. And what was great with Elizabeth and Music Escort Memphis's expertise is that they'd had 5 years to kind of figure out their kind of like variables and stuff and make the tweaks. And so we have our program like varied like with 5 years of kind of experience of dialing into things like that to where it's just been really, really outstanding. We're very proud of it. And the artists that are participating in it are like very proud of it too, which really means a lot. Like when you see a cool band talking about how proud they are to live in Huntsville and like how proud they are that like the city is like supporting their efforts, like that is just man, like coming from the private sector, that's just mind-blowing. You just don't see that.
How much of that is your job versus, I mean, when we first started talking, you know, the idea is to make people aware of Memphis, make people aware of Huntsville. And the thought is the touring acts. Mm-hmm. But that's not all what you just were talking about. It's making musicians want to be live there. But you mentioned in that article we alluded to earlier that you need more of the infrastructure type, the music industry people, the PR people, the producers, the engineer. Same conversations we're having in Chattanooga, and it's the how to support that and who can support it. You know, we have lots of people who move here from Nashville. They don't want the big city. They like the smaller, and they can do things here more. But we're having those same struggles, you know, mm-hmm. those same conversations of, you know, we need more venues for these people to play. We need more money. We need more fans. I mean, all of those things. So how much of that is your job?
I mean, it's a lot. I mean, it's yeah, the music office role expands to where it's the I would say, like, so you have the Orion Amphitheater and the C3 Presents Festival is kind of like the big end of like the big projects, like big kind of like pieces that can attract like the global interest from like the music community and like music fans to looking at, you know, like you have Phish playing at a venue, you have people from outside the United States that are like going to see your venue, at least on a website, you know? So there's that aspect, but then there's also, I mean, even like elementary education, like working with like the school programs to ensure that they have the resources they need to make sure their programs are as dynamic and innovative as possible. And also like the community nonprofits that focus on music. And so we have the big picture, like big commercial, sexy pieces with like the big name, bands that everybody knows. But, I would say that it's even more of a focus to develop that like kind of like local environment, and you know, the more dynamic, professional, sustainable musicians you have in a community, just the better your community is going to be. You know, because a lot of these bands, when they're not on tour, they might have side projects and be playing at like local venues, like local bars, and kind of like working with just kind of like playing with like other locals, like Rising Tide Lifts All Boats. The better players you have in your city, whether it's for one night or permanently, it just is naturally going to elevate your whole culture. Similar to how, when, you know, there was some anxiety that the other stakeholders in the city had about the Orion Amphitheater. Well, when Orion has a show, like, will anything else in the city be able to happen? We proved that like right away with like opening nights, where we actually had a, with opening night, the Orion, we had a sold-out show. But on that same night, we had a sold-out show with, I think it was Brooks and Dunn at our 8,000 capacity, like, Brooks Center Arena. And so we've had nights that have been really cool where we have, like, a big show at the Brooks Arena, a sold-out minor league hockey, or a sold-out minor league baseball game, a sold-out soccer game, and a sold-out Orion show all on the same night. And just seeing, like, how the calendars of the other venues and towns, calendars have looked with just like the number of shows and the quality of shows since the Orion's been built, I think has been really, really awesome and spectacular, and proves that kind of rising tides approach to where, you know, you do things like South Star and the Orion, it just puts the industry and the agents and the management's attentions just on your market, to where, you know, like My Morning Jacket's manager or agent might like put My Morning Jacket in the Orion, but as y'all know, like these like agents have like a ton of developing acts, and so now they're looking at, right, at just like Huntsville is a place they need to play, instead of us like having to go out. And so it's been really good seeing all shapes and sizes. I mean, we had George Strait in Huntsville on Wednesday night, which was, that's still mind blowing to me, that George Strait came here.
Well, we could do this for a while, exactly. And we don't have a while.
no, we need to let you go. Thank you for your time, but go ahead.
Yeah, all of it does fascinate me though, because there's so many parallels to what we dream of here in the city of Chattanooga. All of us here are essentially lifelong, and we probably found the there we go. All of us here are essentially lifelong Chattanoogans, so we dream as much as we follow the local governments, and there's a lot of change over there too. You might not be in this position in 5 years, you know, Matt. I mean, right? I'm not trying to sell you short, but you might not be. And what you just discussed in the schools, well, that's generational change. Right? You can get some stuff done here in a few years. As you take the job, as you've moved around from the private to public sector, you've been in some really cool cities. You kicked around the Carolinas to Austin, Memphis, you know, but generational change, that's bold, right? That's a bold thing to talk about. Trying to bring a few extra bands to town certainly got a boldness to it too, but certainly, really think it's very cool what the city's doing, and the way that you have embraced it, and just your energy here today, it's pretty clear. And
yeah, the commitment. That's what I'm impressed with.
It's nice to see. It really is. Super fast thing. I know you played music early on, and it sounds like the way that it read, it was the same way as me, or at least similar. You realize, at least the way it read, you weren't. That was not where your best talents were. You weren't going to be, I think you said the next Dave Matthews or maybe Bob Dylan or whatever it was. How hard was that for you? Because for me, at first, I struggled with it 15, 20 years ago. I want to be a rock star. Well, buddy, you're not going to. So
yeah.
You better figure out something else.
I'll tell you what. I mean, my ego was a place where, like, I was there. It took me 1 week living in Austin, Texas, and doing just the, like, open mic, open jam scene at coffee shops and small venues to realize, like,
I ain't good enough for this.
Like, there is just no, because I pulled around and, like, you know, I actually started playing music in college because I busted up my knee playing basketball and was kind of like, you know, needed something to do. So I bought a guitar, picked up, like, learned how to play five chords, and play five chords, you can play, like, bars, you know?
20
like,
years, it's like, all you, 20 years ago, it's all you needed.
Yeah, just like you can do a 3-hour GCD rendition of everything. And so, you know, this is the difference of people who can really play. I got really lucky. I was in a softball league with a guy named Brad Spees, who I would say was my first industry mentor. He was the head of special projects at South by Southwest, kind of told my situation. And he created like a kind of seasonal position for me too, where it's like, man, he's like, I know you're green, but you know, you're older than most of like the 22-year-olds that are taking these positions. And I had done like some work like in day jobs. I had a pretty solid resume to fall back on if the music thing didn't pan out. But you know, I jumped in and felt like, man, that guy was a big reason. Just I got excited showing up and working with him every day about all the stuff that South by Southwest was doing. And so, It was about a week of like, what the heck am I going to do now? I realized that my challenge is just not ever going to be there. But it got there quickly. And I mean, you know, just committed to it. And then from there, just like new opportunities kept creating themselves for it. Cause I mean, I've always I've never been the smartest person in the room, but I always work hard at what I'm doing. And I'm good at kind of surrounding myself with people who are smart and dynamic. And so I think as long as we're doing that in Huntsville, bringing in the smart people who can really, really like move the needle and elevating the culture here and the dynamic talent, then I think that, you know, like being a cheerleader is like a very fun part of the job.
I always loved hearing the stories about the people who moved to Nashville and, you know, they get a job waiting tables and figure out that the guy washing dishes is a better guitar player than they are. You know, you hear those stories all the time. But, Matt, man, thank you so much for your time. We will definitely do this again if you are willing, because
anytime. And we're actually have had like conversations with like some people in Chattanooga. We would love to develop a like we call these export programs. We're actually like launching one soon. Like we've kind of started gently going into one with some partners we have in Nashville on kind of a development basis with some people down in that Berry Hill campus. That's really exciting. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, starting something with Chattanooga, you know, we just need to find the right partner, because it's pretty easy given the like radius to where, you know, it's as easy as like doing a showcase in Chattanooga with a handful of Huntsville artists, and then like the next month or next quarter, doing a showcase with Chattanooga artists here. And that's an easy way to kind of break it. And I really think that, you know, if we can spur more like city government and civic like roles to kind of take what we're doing in Huntsville, then that would be, I think that if every city had a music office, regardless of how like efficient or effective it is, I mean, I think that that would be, I mean, what a win for
We're close. We're close. We definitely have a mayor who's committed. He loves music as much as we do, but there's so many other things for them to focus on that dedicating an office like that, I don't think we're there yet. But anyway, we got to get you again. Thanks, for your time.
Appreciate it.
You know, seriously, we could do this for the rest of the day. I could anyway.
Yeah,
so.
I love it again. I mean, anytime I'd love to. I mean, this is great. And actually, and my kid, I have a 4-year-old who's huge into aquariums, and so we
come on up.
Come on. So I'll let y'all know when next time we're coming. We'll have to like see y'all in person.
It ain't as cool as everybody says it is.
That's not true. Don't listen to him. He hates everything. It's great. All right. Thanks, Matt.
See you, Matt. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, but there you go. I mean, so again, I keep going back to who's listening to the show. You know, are they industry people? I think so. I hope so. I think they are. But also, am I that person who just bought a ticket because I'm going to my first festival and I want to see Gwen Stefani? And it wasn't raining that hard. You know, why'd you got to cancel? I get it. And I'm not making fun. I'm really not, because I would have been that person. But sure. There's a whole lot more. There is a whole lot more that's involved in these kind of decisions. And that's one. The other thing is I'm so impressed with how long-term they're thinking.
Oh, I know. Yeah, they've really committed to this thing. They really want to transform Huntsville into a, not another Nashville, but, you know, it's a music destination that when people think music, they want people to associate that with Huntsville. That's a big goal.
When you just said that, I don't know if you've ever seen the documentary about what, you know, country music, I'm sure, it was the country music, why East Tennessee versus Nashville, and why did Nashville become the country music center? It was the paper. Because that's where the lawyers live.
Yeah.
That's where the contracts are made. That's so, yeah, Huntsville is just like Chattanooga. It's never going to be Nashville because that's where the contracts. That's funny. I hadn't thought about that till you just said that. all right. So, guys, we have so much more to talk about. Russ's T-shirt. I can't wait to hear about K-Fest. You went with some good friends of ours, our new camp buddies from Bonnaroo.
Yeah, I'll just shout out Jerry and Mike and Brad, Nashville Brad, and Beth, who we've had on the show before. And we've, you know, you've probably heard about all these people that we kind of merged our camps together. And this was neat because it was like South Star. It was kind of a, you know, instead of a once a year thing when we get to see everybody, it's turned into twice a year, more maybe.
If you had dialed up the weather, I don't think you could have got better.
Oh my God. Coming after South Star and then the extreme heat of Bonnaroo, this was just perfect. Textbook perfect weather. Warm and sunny during the day, a little cool at night. You put on your jacket, put on your flannel, and we just had a great time. Weather was absolutely perfect.
Yeah, I can't wait. We're going to talk about that. We're going to eventually revisit because we missed an anniversary exit 111. It's hard to believe that was five years. And so we all have stories about that we're going to revisit in the coming weeks. And then we have some very special guests that we're trying to line up. So again, as I said at the beginning, we think this is the kind of quiet time, but there's a lot happening.
We keep finding more and more conversations.
Okay, so there you go. Another good show. And Matt, thank you so much. Man, I hope you'll come back because this was awesome. We learned a lot.